Hey, good evening. It's Jim Hoffman from EMS Office Hours.
With Josh Knapp.
Josh, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay, Jim. How are you? We're talking about this topic again. I thought you weren't going to repeat yourself.
What topic?
What are the standards in EMS? I mean, it seems like we're always, like, touching about this.
Well, I think what I'm trying to do tonight with this subject is maybe trying to just point out a little bit, I guess, of the focus of what we're doing. You know, I mean, you see a lot of great things going on and people jumping around. Oh, my system is using these drugs. I've got fentanyl in my system. And I've got, ketamine or whatever in my system. And I'm using RSI, and you know, we're doing this and we're doing that. And then you got the poor slob EMS, you know, agency across the country who is still trying to, you know, have to call a doc to give nitro paste. You know what I mean? And it's like we have all these great changes that seem to be going on and expanding our protocols and things like that, but we can't seem to band together and make some type of
uniform standards.
Right. Uniformity of it
right.
all. You know.
Yeah. And it's funny because we've talked about this and it's like, I was thinking about this the other day. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Because it's all wrapped together. You think about it, you know, we've talked about like the standards of how we approach our jobs and how we come in to the environment and how we present ourselves as either professionals or as, you know, as schlubs who really don't give a crap. You know, if you're showing up in a dirty T-shirt and flip-flops, it's not really a professional image now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're talking about, hey, you know, some people are still using LifePak 10s. Some people don't even do EKGs. And some people are, you know, diagnosing and interpreting 15-lead EKGs with, you know, with full connection to the cath lab.
Yeah. I mean, part of it too, like I mentioned in a little blur for the show, like we put up with this lowest common denominator, and it's that lowest common denominator is not just personnel wise, as far as people with attitudes or people that don't want to, you know, do the job and do what's right for the patient, for the agency that they work for, but also lowest common denominator and what we're getting buy-in as far as the treatment we're giving people and the treatment that's available to people. I mean, I worked a place once where all the ambulances had LifePak 12, right? But they had a couple of fly cars. The fly cars had LifePak 10s in them. And, but that's okay. They're just a fly car.
You know? No, that's not okay.
But
because
I'm like,
that may be
about?
The only thing you have. Now you have no uniformity in your own system.
Exactly.
I mean, most times you have at least uniformity in the system. But we're talking about, like, uniformity across the country.
Right.
And I, you know, like,
I don't blame it on medical directors a lot. Oh, the medical directors are the ones that say the drugs that we can give and the a lot of times the equipment that we can use. I mean, some of it also, I guess, comes down to financial issues too, where a lot of places can't afford LifePak 15s. You know, they can't afford all this great equipment. I mean, during the Web Summit, Kelly Grayson did a talk on sepsis and talked about lactate monitors, you know, and a good way to find out if somebody was septic to do a blood, you know, like a glucose test. It's a lactate monitor, same type of thing.
Well, they also have iStat, you know, and they're using it in a lot of emergency rooms, and that gives you, you know, some essential chemistry, blood chemistries instantaneously.
Right.
And you would think emergency services, you know, first on scene, immediate diagnosis. Hey,
sure.
That might be a useful thing. They use it at the marathon. In the New York City Marathon, they use it. I mean,
and what does it read, you know?
It reads potassium, potassium levels. It gives you a whole bunch of different standard blood chemistries. I believe it's potassium.
The big
I
ones,
said
I
that
guess,
like
is
four,
what it
the
is.
big ones, right? Why am I blanking on the
So you get potassium and then potassium junior,
chlora? Yeah.
potassium senior.
Yeah, right, exactly, right. No, sodium, and for calcium, I mean, all the other major ones that
Right.
are going to affect, that are going to cause arrhythmias, you know, that are
Right.
going to cause definite cardiological or system-wide problems, and you know, you need to, you can correct that. I mean, holy crap. We carry a lot of the drugs, and other systems carry some of these. I'm killing myself here, Jim.
Well, but think about it though. Like that's one thing, right? And then the lactate monitor that I mentioned is another thing. And most agencies already carry glucometers, pulse ox, you know, pulse ox readers, end tidal readers.
CO2, right?
You know, some agencies now they carry the carbon monoxide, you know, readers as well for, you know, for those types of calls, smoke inhalation calls and stuff. And we have all these things that are out there. And I guess I would imagine the main reason why most places don't carry all these great tools, and I mean, they're basically they're tools, right? We still have to do our assessments on patients, but these are tools to kind of help us diagnose a little bit, help us kind of figure out what's happening with the patient based on information we can gain from these types of tools. We can't just, of course, treat a patient based on the reading, you know, on the solely on a reading anyway, but I mean, I guess the reason why most places don't carry because it's a financial issue, you know. I know Kelly you had mentioned those lactate monitors, like you know, $500 or better, you know, to get those, you know. But yet, the septic call is kind of a common call we get in EMS. You know, septic patients, it's kind of a frequent type
It's a
of
very
a
frequent
call,
call,
you
but
know.
you know, and you kept on saying you've been saying can't afford, can't afford, can't afford, and you know, we've touched on this before. It's not can't afford, it's don't want to afford, and that's really that's a reality of the situation. I mean, you know, you can afford, you know, some holiday pageantry. You can afford to dress up, you know, the town. You can afford to clean the streets. That's
Right.
many times the expense of, you know, sort of that one-time expenditure of having LIFEPAK 12s, having unified LIFEPAK 12s, having, you know, blood chemistry in having glucometers. I mean, you know, and it feels it's crazy. Ever since I sort of, you know, talk to people on a national basis and talk to people, you know, in other states and other systems, I was a little bit taken aback because I was sitting there and like a typical New Yorker thinking we're the best in the world, you know, best in the country, best in the world, best of everything, and we didn't even have glucometers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very humbling sort of experience to get sort of put back there and said, you know, you may be one of the busiest in the country, but you're sure shit not the most advanced.
Right.
And that comes from a point of, you know, that's a point of contention. I mean, don't say that to the guys who are running EMS here because they'll, you know, we're doing everything we need to do. But are
Well,
we?
that's a, right. That's the thing, I guess. I mean, I guess that's part of tonight's you know, topic is this whole thing of the great things that we're doing, you know, and again, you can beat your chest all you want on how great where you work is, you know, as far as maybe protocols are more advanced, maybe you've got drugs that a lot of other places don't have. But what does that say about the places that don't have it? You know, do they not have it because you're so advanced, or do not have it because, you know, their management or their medical control and oversight can't see past, you know, what's been set in stone for, like you said, for forever, and we don't need it. We're doing everything just fine. We're doing everything we can. Instead of trying to focus on the fact that there are some things that people can do to, I guess, get that uniformity. I mean, listen, you're not gonna, every place isn't gonna be exactly the same because some places are, a little more ahead of the curve than others, and I don't think that's the way it should be. I think there should be some type of a national effort, whenever things get changed when it comes to drugs and protocols and things like that. It shouldn't, to me, I don't think it should be a state by state, controlled thing, because then you get people that go from one state to another and they're not familiar with those drugs. They're not familiar with that treatment because they're coming from one state that didn't have it. Now they get to a state that does, or worse, they get to a state that didn't have it and they're coming from a state that was, they were doing a lot of different things. And now they go someplace where they can't do that. And it's a good way for somebody to screw up and start treating your patient based on what they understood is the standard of care from where they were before. You know what I mean?
Right. But that's also the difficulty that we have. I was just talking to somebody yesterday who was a 10-year medic from Illinois. And the guy knows his stuff. He came to New York and he just wanted to, do some part-time work in the system. Now, what system can't use a guy who's been in the system, been there, done it for 10 years? I mean, that's valuable, that's valuable time on the job.
Right.
And he could not get reciprocity. He tried 16 ways to Sunday, and New York State has this thing where you got to go through everything all again in the New York State
Right. You need to
curriculum.
take a full refresher
Right.
class and
Right. And it's like, why? I mean, what are you accomplishing by doing that? And are you insinuating that you're the best? Are you insinuating that, I mean, New York State, for crying out loud, doesn't even accept the National Registry.
Yeah. Well, the funny
I'm
thing
still
is,
blown
though,
away.
Josh, the skill sheets for New York are pretty much their National Registry skill sheets.
Interesting, right?
You know what I mean?
That National Registry accepts New York's, but New
Yeah.
York doesn't accept National Registry. I always wondered why, always thought about that.
I don't know. Again, I think my main thing, I mean, you think about even talking about things like, using things like outdated or standard of care that aren't really proven, everything from LASIX to long spine boards and things like that. You still have places that give LASIX on a regular basis and other places who don't do it anymore.
Right.
They've taken it out of the protocol.
Right.
I mean, why do you think it is that we just can't seem to get on the same page? I mean, I think it hinders us as a profession when we can't seem to agree just on something as basic as, let's say, treatment modalities that paramedics can do, from one place to another.
It's Tim is ringing in my ears on this one. It's, talking to your medical director and getting the medical. And look, in the end,
And you can, that's a possibility,
that is a
but you
possibility,
also
but
have to have a medical director that is EMS friendly, that is somehow motivated to do that. And a lot of times, and I think we've had when Tim's been on, Tim Noonan's been on here before, he's talked about a big reason why a lot of medical directors don't get on board because we're not paying them. We're not paying them to be medical. It's sort of like this title that they're kind of stuck with as being, in the ER or something like that. It's just kind of like a sort of like an add-on responsibility type thing. So why are they going to take the time to start writing up different protocols and defending the change that they want to make to put before a state or regional type body to get that change? You know what I mean? If there's no pay involved, there's no where is their incentive besides just listen to the paramedic that's trying to chew their ear and tell them the way things are in a neighboring area.
Well, part of me says that medicine shouldn't be incentivized by only pay. I mean,
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, I don't think it is
well, but that
100%, but
example, you're sort of saying that it is.
Well, I think it is though, to a point where I think the pay when you're paying somebody to be a medical director for EMS, you know, I mean that's a big responsibility. You know, I mean there should be some type of compensation for that. It shouldn't be the only drive that they have to do that. But I mean it's a lot of responsibility to expect a doc to, you know, be a medical director for an EMS agency and take that responsibility on.
Yeah, you know, you're dealing a little bit with apples and oranges, because you're talking about a system that's not embracing the idea of that a medical director is more than a title, and then you're also talking about the motivation of a person who accepts that role and responsibility, because it's not like they walk in and say, "Hey, you know." Well, most systems, I'll say, I'm sure there are systems out there that, you know, are basically centric around a particular hospital, and if you raise, you know, rise to the level, a certain administrative level within that hospital as a doctor, you're forced upon by, you know, the hospital to take oversight of the EMS system as one of your responsibilities. I'm
No.
sure that happens in some places,
Yeah, I
but
think it's
in the
everywhere.
majority, what?
I don't think it's everywhere.
No, but
But
in the
it
majority of
happens.
places, it's a place that, hey, you know, medical director is another title that you take on willingly.
Yeah.
You know, maybe for the idea of prestige, maybe for the idea of career advancement, who the hell knows? But when you take something on voluntarily, it's a whole different ball of wax than if it's thrust upon you. Because the truth is even if you're being paid extra and it's thrust upon you, you're going to do less than if you take it on as an added responsibility voluntarily. And I think one of the problems is, you know, again, that we're too frickin' fractured. The people don't agree and don't want to agree. You're going to get some guys out there who aren't into the latest and greatest, you know, who are going to remember when they went to medical school 30 years ago, you gave Lasix. You know, and they're not going to look at the research that says, hey, you know what, for, you know, this type of acute event, it's really not going to make a difference.
But this
Or it
comes,
causes harm.
but you know what? I mean that is the point, you do see that, but that's part of what my I guess so sort of the topic tonight too is why do we put up with those types of providers, that lowest common denominator that's in the ranks of EMS, we put up with them, and when they seem to be the ones that in the end are the ones that keep us back, that are not being a proactive voice for the profession.
What do you mean by keeping the lowest
Well, the
common
people,
denominator
well, the people
providers? You
that
mean the
either,
docs?
no, let me talk about providers. You talk about, like you said, people that, oh, I've given that forever, I'm not changing.
Yeah, but we don't have that. You know, it's like when they took Lasix out of our protocols here, you know, a lot of people cheered it and said, you know, it's about frickin' time. And those were the
Sure.
guys who were paying attention to the latest literature and really, you know, were on acting, trying to understand medicine on the in the best interest of the patient as EMS field providers. But it didn't matter whether they agreed with it or didn't agree with it. Their protocol said they couldn't use it, and it was taken away from them. So, you know, at that point in time, it's not. I don't think. I think the providers in the field have an effect on this unity situation. And I've said that before. I've said that we as providers own that. You know, we have to sort of raise our standards, be able to talk intelligently with the doctors, be able to give good presentations, be able to, you know, gain and garner the respect of the people that we interface with. So they, you know, because whenever you do that, the people that are in charge and making the overall decisions, like the medical director, are going to pay more attention to the decisions they make. If they don't respect you and think you're a bunch of yahoos, they're just going to do the minimal stuff that they need to do because really, what are you? You're transportation to the hospital. And they're not going to treat you with any more respect than that. That's my two cents on that.
Well, but my thing is, I mean, to me, a lot of times the people that aren't EMS and they're just doing that level of care, right? They're just acting as the transport, facilitating a transport to a hospital for something.
Yeah, they don't advance us.
Right, and this is what I'm saying when I talk about lowest common denominator in within our own ranks. You know, when the outside entities look at us as a whole, you know, they see those people, you know, as being, you know, an element of what we are as a profession, and then there's no motivation for them to try to help those of us that want to get elevated, you know, get elevated.
You know, I'm not fully on board with that statement because I really think that we're
get on board.
No, tough shit.
We only got 45 minutes here.
We're too totally right. We're too total. There's two worlds. There's the administrative world that happens on the higher levels, and there is some interface with the sort of the Indians out there, the field operations, if you will. And, you know, so you have that understanding. But, you know, keep in mind, any time that you have, like, sort of a area of function, like in the administrative world, you're going to have a lot of lateral communication. So they may talk, you know, administratively, they're going to talk with hospital relations in terms of billing. They're going to talk with, you know, how many admissions they get. You know, what is the and that's like for the private, for the municipalities, they may talk to, you know, find out what level of care the hospitals can provide, where their centers of excellence and things like that. So you have that level that goes across, and the people that are interfacing on that lateral level may not really understand, you know, may not understand as well what the field people are doing. And then you have the field people who, you know, like communicate and laterally communicate with fire, laterally communicate with PD, laterally communicate with other systems out there.
Right.
And they don't, you know, right. There's not that cross communication that happens. So you get these sort of these areas where you don't have an understanding. You don't, you know, they don't, administratively, they look down, they don't really understand all that EMS does. And then on the field level, they look up and they don't understand administratively all the things that have to happen in order for them to be able to do their job.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So you have that vacuum, you know, that air gap there. And whenever you have that, you're going to have a lack of coordination.
Yeah. You know, I have a caller here, Josh. Let me
grab him.
Let's see who this is. I have a hello. Hey, caller, you there? Hello.
You would lose him.
I thought I heard him.
Huh.
All right. Well, somebody was trying to call in. I guess I must have lost you there. If you want to call back, of course, feel free to. Jump on back there. I'll bring you to
just interrupt me, Jim. Now you can go on a tirade. But
yeah,
you know what's going on here is this is critical to our function and our being able to coordinate with standards across the country because if we're not able to communicate within our own little silos, with our own little areas, how the hell do you expect us to communicate across county lines or even state lines or on the national basis? And I think it really comes down to, you know, that discussion a long time ago where EMS was going to be regathered under the Department of Homeland Security and coordinated from a federal level.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is we still don't have any federal coordination on EMS.
Yeah, I mean, even I'd like to actually revisit that and get a hold of the people that started doing that because they had a good idea on trying to get that accomplished. You know, it was pretty much the framework was there ready to be embraced, and it seems like that was never done, you know. And I think – I think that all these new things that are going on are great. You know, but again, I think we have to try to kind of focus on some of the things that we've talked about on this show in the past, and everything from giving pain medications on standing orders to, you know, the Lasix issue, to the spine board immobilization, CPAP, you know, all these things that are the stuff that we should be doing that we're not doing, and we end up just kind of, you know, putting up with it.
You know, and you're talking about, and it's a good point. I'm not taking away from the point you're making in terms of, hey, as providers, we are not delivering, quote unquote, a standard of care across all borders to all patients.
Right.
Not all patients are treated equally, and that's a given. That's knowledge. That's absolutely out there.
But
let
why
me
is
talk
that?
About something. Hold on. Let me talk about something I feel is even freaking more important. How about how we're treated? How about the standards that we work under? There are some areas where you can work multiple, you know, 24s all in a row. They don't care how tired you are. There are no standards on that level. And you can just go out there and, you know, wreck whatever havoc or be a danger to yourself, which is even worse. How about the areas where, you know, turnout gear or BSI weren't even, you know, PPE weren't even standardized?
Well, there's still, even to a point now, there's still not. I mean, you know, what New York City wears bunker gear, right, on like MVAs and stuff like that.
Those, finally.
Right? What's that?
Right. Finally. I mean, how many MVAs have you did in T-shirts?
I've never. Right, exactly. I'd have a polo shirt on.
Right.
And your regular work pants and stuff.
Right,
and,
yeah. I don't mean that you were ever, like, unprofessional, but at the time, that's what everybody was wearing.
Right.
I remember I was issued a polo shirt at one
time. Right.
You know, and that was
go to MVAs and you'd be in the car and you'd be in there trying to get somebody out and the fireman would have bunker gear on. You'd be you'd be sitting there with nothing but, you know, your scope around your neck and that'd be it.
Bare arms and thin rubber gloves. And and that's what I'm expected to handle my part of patient care. But holy crap, I'm in between this metal wreckage of sharp twisted metal and broken glass. Where's my protection? And,
well, even now, like there are places now that they have you have to wear certain gear on calls, like MVAs and stuff like that. But it's more for identification purposes than it is for safety. You know, like the jacket, you wear a jacket, and the jacket says paramedic on it, but it's not really like bunker gear or anything like that. And your pants are still the same pants you just had on 5 minutes ago. You know, and the most you can do is maybe you put a helmet on. That's the biggest, you know, protector that you're going to be having.
A definite proven. How about eye protection? And just by the statement that you say many places have that, you turn it around opposite to that and say some places don't. So there are still EMS agencies out there that don't enforce the rule that you have, you know, full boots on your feet. You don't have to – you wear a helmet on when you're at the scene. I mean, you see pictures all the time on Facebook of people, you know, on the scene standing there in the polo shirt.
Yeah.
And that's typified of what EMS was around the, you know, country. Fire was in their turnout gear, helmets and all that bunker gear and all that protective equipment. And EMS is standing right next to them with nothing or a cloth shirt.
Well, it's funny. That's something.
You talk about drug standards and talk about treating the patient. How about our standards and what we walk away with?
And I think a little bit of that goes hand in hand, where in order to sort of be expected to or be respected to handle these advanced drugs or let's say expanded protocols even and some of the higher tech equipment and stuff like that, I mean, shouldn't you be expected to be the professional that is – you know, equally able to handle that professional equipment and not be on scene with, you know, with flip-flops on or on scene with, you know what I mean?
And, yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely 100%.
So when you're asking
if you're not
people,
given it, if you're not given it, how do you bring it to the scene? If you're not given a helmet and bunker gear to wear, how do you bring it to the scene?
Right. Well, that's the thing too. That's part of the circle of, you know, nonsense.
And now I'm going to tap into the live wire, all right? Because
don't do it.
You know I'm going to do it.
I know where you're going. Because I'm already on the cusp of bringing it there myself, but if you bring it in, then I can blame you for rattling the cage.
Where do we go with the volunteers?
Well, here's the thing. All right. You know, it's funny you bring this up, and this is something I wanted to talk about when you were talking about how when we show up on scenes and our professional outlook and the perception and things like that, and what about us and what we're getting out of things. But when you have, I have to be careful how I say this, but when you have,
you know what? Don't be careful. Just say it.
No, here's the thing. EMS week just passed, right? I was at a place where they gave a speech about EMS week or whatever, and the guy was talking. This is a guy who is the president of some ambulance association.
Remember, it's not a job; it's a calling. But as soon as you tell me it's not a job, does that mean I get paid for it?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know.
So here's the thing: he's a higher up in the EMS ladder or whatever. He's the president of some association and whatnot, and he's given a speech about EMS week, and he starts talking about it doesn't matter if you show up in an ambulance or a tractor, or if you show up in a uniform or overalls and a flannel shirt, you know.
God.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, yes, it does matter.
Thank you. You just put us back 30 years. Thank you so much. That's really great. When our leaders sit there and won't recognize the difficulties that we have of being a unified force across this country, and just, you know, because we can just show up any way we want because we're special.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, listen, when I worked in Jersey, and I used to go on car wrecks, and I'd have some of these the volunteers that would show up, and some of them would show up. They would stop, get the ambulance, and they'd come, and they'd be in their bunker gear and whatnot, turnout gear and stuff to do the job. And there'd be others that would show up in their car and crawling around the wreck in shorts and flip flops, you know, just rolling out of bed. I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
So never mind, first of all,
and what happened when you challenged them on their, you know, and it's not enough that we should alone, where we should alone have the common sense that, you know, PPE is for us.
Right.
It's not for anybody to recognize us. Forget that. I mean, I understand from an administrative, and that's where we have that air gap and that lack of communication, because on an administrative basis, oh, you got to have bunker gear so we can tell you apart from fire and police.
Yeah.
So your bunker gear, and even in New York, we don't have the same standards in terms of protection that.
Well, it's not New York's bunker gear. What? It's not fire. Fire.
It's not fire rated.
Right. Yeah, it's not fire.
It's flash rated.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, you're gonna wear the gear that's appropriate for the job that you're doing. But the thing is, never mind the safety issue, you know, for the people that are operating on the scene, you know, if you're not properly, you know, attired for that call. There's also the issue of first of all, the perception of what everybody else is thinking, you know, the outside public that's looking at the scene now and wondering what the hell this guy in the shorts is doing crawling around the car. You know, also the fact that that person now has a potential of becoming another patient very easily.
Right. Well, but that's what I was saying before. What happens when you challenge that person who's showing up on shorts and flip-flops? Because 9 times out of 10, they're, you know, sometimes they're the newbie that just shows up. But most of the people who are new to the industry want all that buff gear stuff. They want to look official. They want to identify in some ways. It's the guys who've been there for 20 years, been volunteering in the system, and are a captain or something else, some bigwig, and they just happen to be on their way. And it's like, don't you know me? You know, I'm in charge of everything. I could show up anyway. Now bulletproof? Does that make your skin, you know?
And that's part of the problem, too, I think, is that you get the people that have – that are the ones who are captains of the Chiefs, and they feel like, okay, I can just show up in my, you know, my jeans and hold the radio and, you know, bark at people and, you know, get things done.
Right. You know?
And listen, to me, it's to me, that is part of the. I know that that goes on all over the place. You know, you'll get people listen to the show and say, "Well, where I volunteer, you know, our standards are this, and we don't get to
Yeah,
have to
but that's
go
the
out
whole
with
fucking
this." And
problem. Where you say standards, our standards are this. Our set, you know, that's the biggest BS line that there is. They shouldn't be any less than the best standards out there.
yeah, but listen, even during when listen when I did the web summit that a few weeks ago, right? Through the whole day in the chat room, when the speakers were talking about whatever topic that they were talking about, whether it was talking about being a mentor for newcomers, whether it was about the geriatrics, the abdominal trauma, whatever it was, I noticed in the chat room an ongoing thread about everybody comparing how they treat those patients, you know, from one another. And that was, to me, that was a big takeaway for me. And I think that's one of the reasons why I made tonight's topic of this, you know, kind of being this no focus on what we're doing as a profession. We're all over the place. Now, listen at that. Look at
But I
that
think you
chat
got
thread.
it.
It was all over. I mean, the one guy. Oh, where we are, we do this. And oh, we're still doing this where I am. And
And
oh, we don't even do that here. I don't know what you're talking about. You
you
know.
just said the critical part of that. There's no focus.
Yeah, you know, it's just amazing. And it was funny because even after the webinars that day, I sent out a follow-up sort of survey asking people what they thought of it and stuff like that. And at the end, I had a kind of an open-ended question, and a lot of the people that responded said that, you know, they really enjoyed it, whatever, but they noticed, because one of the questions I asked was, did you find the chat room distracting, helpful, enjoyable, whatever? And most people said they enjoyed the live interaction with other EMS providers, but they did find that a lot of people were comparing how treatment and things were between different states and things like that. Now, of course, there were some people there from like other countries, so of course, there's going to probably be a wide gap between what they're
There
doing.
was another interesting dynamic, and I know you noticed it because you got involved a couple of times. But you know, it's like when those little pissing matches broke out. You know, those little beef. Well, we still give Lasix, or we don't. You know, or we never think of that, or we give Epi. I mean, you know, and that little bit of, well, we don't do that, so we're better than you. And we really got to sort of cut that crap out, because whenever you have that insider squabbling. And I know that we do it all the time everywhere. As
Sure.
soon as you have that, you know, go back to your question, why can't we get those standards? Why can't our higher level people defend us or defend our protocols or even update our protocols so we can act in a standard of care that reflects the most current information available? It's because we look like idiots when we do this squabbling. Whether it's true or not, whether the guy next to you is a complete screw up or not, that's something that you need to take care of quietly and in your own house. You don't share that with outside people. And when
Yeah.
I say outside people, the triage nurse, the emergency room docs, all of that crap, you just don't do it there. You know, because what putting somebody down may make you feel better for the moment, but it makes us all less in for the long run.
Yeah.
Sorry for the lecture there, but that's just, you know, these little pissing matches really, I'm so tired of it. It's so juvenile, and it doesn't help us at all. It doesn't, you know, we have a problem, and as you said it before, this problem of delivering a standard of care across all agents, across all areas. You know, and when I say areas, I mean geographic areas, you know, across the country. All right, great, I buy that, and it's important. But you know what? Even more near and dear to my heart is how we are treated in the field, how we are respected by the community, how we are viewed and looked on, and the equipment we get. You know, do you have the latest technology inside the ambulance that's going to help you in the event of a crash? Or do you have something that's, you know, do you have a rig that's 15 years old and is going to collapse on you the second, you know, a leaf falls on it?
Yeah.
I mean, these are the things that are critically important and sort of the foundation of it. It's like we can't do these jobs if we're not protected in these jobs.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, like you said.
And that's not gonna. No, go ahead.
Well, I mean, listen, tonight's talk, it's like we're all over the place because this is like a passionate thing, I think. You know, we're just talking about you and I talked to other people about this type of theme before. And it gets very passionate in the discussion. There's not really a resolution that you can come about with this except to say that we need to really have some type of uniformity. And that's the one thing I always find that in the end, at the end of the conversation, is like everyone does agree on that, yeah, we need to have some type of uniformity. And whether it's because, you know, you're aggravated because, you know, volunteers are showing up in overalls and, you know, and
shirts.
Yeah, and a tractor, or you're irritated because, you know, why am I still giving, you know, Lasix? Why don't I have CPAP? Or you're irritated because, you know, oh, I can't give this guy 5 milligrams of morphine for, you know, a broken leg. I got to call up and beg the doc to give me 5 milligrams, and he's telling me to give him two. You know, it's like, you know, it's the same frustration that seems to go round and round with everybody that you speak to, in one form or another.
But there is a solution to it. And you said, you know, and we've talked about this before on this cast, is that,
yeah,
you know, we're not here to solve the problems. We're here to raise the issues. We don't always have an answer, you know, or mostly we don't have an answer. But here we do have an answer. And you start out with the issue of liability. Because if you are working, and let's just talk about basics. You're still getting the polo shirt, and the county next door, who has a little bit better tax revenue than you do, they have full bunker gear. Well, you know what? You have there's a liability issue because the standard is full bunker gear. If you're not getting that full bunker gear, then you need to bring it up with your guys and point it out and say, you know what? It's not just the people in the next state. It's the people 10 miles away who are getting this protective equipment, and we don't even have it yet. And let's start building.
But then it's like you're the one that's causing it trouble. You're the one that's going to cost the agency all this money to have to go and buy, turnout gear because, you know, you want what everybody else has. And not that it's wrong, you know, but people don't want to be the focus of management's negativity, you know.
Well, that's sales.
But I think you're right, though. I think there's a way to be the champion, let's say, for these types of issues, okay, and present it in a way. And again, like you said, it's the way of presenting it. It's almost like a salesmanship of presenting it to management as a liability, as saying, well, you know, yeah, listen, this is the standard, you know, but if somebody gets hurt by not having this, it's going to cost you more money, you know, than it would if you just went ahead and bought the turnout gear, you know, now, rather than waiting for something to happen.
You know what? And in my opinion, and it's my opinion, but the management aren't really your tough audience, isn't really the audience that you have to really, really consider. Yeah, you can be a champion of this and everything else, but you don't have to go up the tree and say, hey, listen, we all need this, whether or not we all recognize that we need it or not. I think that you sort of have to start within the ranks and talk to your fellow providers and get them all on board and understanding that, hey, we need this, or educate them to why Lasix may not be their first drug of choice, you know, or tell them that, you know, that they read online or they were part of this web seminar where CPAP really makes a bigger difference than any chemistry that you can change right away, you know, by making them piss more. So, you know, those are the people that we, because who's the most resistant to change? You know, how many times has something come down from above that says, we're going to do this? I remember when the bunker gear came out and we had people that were like, about frickin' time, I'm glad I now have this protection. It's like, and then how many people were there that said, I got to wear this stuff? What are you kidding me?
Right.
you know?
Well, I remember when there was no bunker gear. I remember going on fire standbys, and the policy was you had to wear your helmet. We didn't have, or I didn't have turnout gear then, but you had to wear the helmet. You know, the stupid blue helmet they give you, and nobody wanted to wear the blue helmet. You know, it would sit on the stretcher with all the other gear, and nobody had the helmet on. You know, but if a lieutenant came on scene and saw you got the helmet, then you would, you know, you they'd ask you what the hell you're doing. You should have your helmet on. You're on a fire scene. You know, so
Well, it's a matter
that
of.
resistance, you know, because they're all, you know, I don't look cool with a helmet on, you know, because it's not a fire helmet. It's like a Con Ed worker helmet.
I remember that, yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like nice, cool fire helmet with the eagle on or something like that. It's a freaking, you know,
The plastic shell, you
plastic
know,
looking,
that's it's
yeah.
like, why do I have to wear this to a fire
All right,
scene?
it should say
So
Verizon
it
on it.
molds around my head better?
Should say Verizon on the front instead of a Star Life. You're like, what the hell's going on here? Am I going to go fix the cable line, or what am I doing?
Absolutely. Check your gas meter, lady.
Right.
You know?
But you know, listen, I don't want to keep beating this, you know, to death tonight. But you know, I, to me, like I said, I think part of a solution, I think, would be if we picked one or two things at a time. And really kind of focused on getting it either implemented or getting it taken out. And whether that's because of a certain drugs that we're using, maybe it's a treatment modality that we're doing, maybe it's equipment that we should have, everybody should have, but kind of focused on it and, you know, research properly so that there's data to prove what we want to do, and then make it a nationwide type of standard. Whereas required for ambulance agencies, you know, in the whole country to have this standard of care, to have this medication or not have this medication, or have this piece of equipment and not have this piece of equipment. I mean, think about even, I mean, there is some credit I guess to be given, because if you think about how, you know, in the past, Ntile CO2, you know, was just a, if you had it, it was nice to have. Oh, I have, you know, it's nice to have that. Now it's like the standard of care. Pretty much everywhere you go, you've got to have Ntile CO2 when you intubate a patient. Whereas before, if you had it, you had it. You didn't have it, you didn't have it. It wasn't a big deal. You know what I mean? Now you've got to have that
Yeah.
capnography reading. You've got to have it associated with, you know, with the your
You got to show a waveform in
right.
your documentation for
Exactly.
crying out loud, right?
So, right. So, I mean, to some point, you know, there are some standards that have been embraced pretty much nationwide. And
I really wonder if they are, because there's still systems out there that aren't doing 12 leads, that don't have life packs.
yeah.
So how are they doing capnography when they tube somebody?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how many of those there are. I mean, pretty much every place that I've looked recently has it. I mean, I'm sure there are probably some remote areas that maybe they don't, that they're not doing it. If they don't have a life pack 12, I
I
guess
mean,
they can't.
can you imagine? I mean, forget about even a life pack. I mean, any. I mean, I still recall from the Web Summit people saying that they didn't even have EKGs. So, can you imagine intubating somebody? Can you personally imagine how naked would you feel? Is really what is the question? If you intubated somebody and weren't able to do an EKG on them.
Yeah.
You know,
No.
or and have capnography going and have pulse oximetry going and all of those other diagnostic and reportive equipment that tell the state of your patient,
Yeah.
you know, with such an important
And that
event.
backs up, it backs up what you're assessing. You know, it backs up what you're doing, and you know, the path that you're going on when you're treating the patient, you know.
Beyond that, it tells if your interventions are effective,
Right.
are having an effect, you
Yeah.
know, and it's like, how do you operate without that? And that's sort of got to be, you know, we've really got to turn the question around. And instead of saying, oh, we need this or we want this or we're missing this, it's how you do it without, how can you justify doing it that way? And that's where I said there really is a solution here, you know, because you got to bring up that liability issue. Because you know now you're not being, now you're not being a whistleblower. Now you're not saying, hey, we're lacking and we're in trouble because we're lacking. We really got to say, hey, you know what? We're exposed because we're not doing this, and we need to defend ourselves and protect ourselves, and we need to get this equipment in order to do it.
And think about
turn it around.
Right. Well, you think about how focused a lot of places are on the documentation angle, right? And you know what we have to
mostly
protect.
From billing.
Right. Well, they're also worried about getting sued by somebody, right? Oh, you didn't board and call this patient, or you didn't do this, you didn't do that. But what about everything else that goes along with it? You know, like you said, you know, that liability that you could say, well, listen, why don't you have, you know, a waveform capnography? You know, why don't you have that? You know, when your neighboring agency has it.
So all of this stuff is a liability issue. Yeah, and that's – they're worried about getting sued from the patient aspect. And just like I was saying before about, you know, looking at the county next door and saying they have full bunker gear, you know, and especially if you're a volunteer. I mean, this is where the volunteers can really hook in and push the system forward and advance it, because they can say, hey – yeah, I know that I'm volunteering and I know you're not paying me, but I deserve the same protection that these paid guys next in the county next door are getting. And so, you know, if we're all volunteer, yeah, we get a little bit less because, you know, all the budget's tight and all that other crap.
Yeah.
But you know what? If I end up getting injured because you didn't provide me with that critical equipment, I'm going to have no choice but to go after you, because that's the standard of care for me.
Right.
And so we all have to turn that around and say, you know, well, there's standard of care for patients, but there's also standard of, you know, systems for us as providers.
Yeah. Listen, Josh, when we end it there, because we have about 10 minutes left, the only thing I would say, I just encourage people to listening to maybe look at some one or two things that where they are and try to think of ways to, you know, bring whatever it is that they're doing to the next level. Whether
one step at a time.
Yeah, whether it's a piece of equipment, maybe it's a medication, and maybe just doing a little something and focusing on that little change to bring it to that next level of whether it's safety for yourself and your coworkers, whether it's something for the patient, whatever it is, you know, maybe if everybody just did a little bit like that, you know, we can get to the next level as a whole a little bit faster, you know.
Yeah. So, you know what? There's nothing wrong with getting online, getting involved in the chat rooms, getting involved in the conversation on a national level and saying, hey, what are you doing over there? We're doing this. Or, you know, when you have this situation, how do you approach it? And finding out. And then – like you said, doing the sort of the homework behind it, figuring out what the best system is, and then asking those critical questions of why aren't we doing this?
Yeah. So anyway, what do you think about the flesh eating people? What do you think about everybody eating everybody? Is a zombie apocalypse coming?
Oh, the guy in Florida?
Or there's a couple of them now, right? There's a few different stories coming out now. This guy in Florida ate somebody's face, and then somebody ate somebody's heart.
Oh, I missed that one.
There's like four or five different stories in different – someplace in Canada, somebody
– oh, awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sort of – isn't that how it all sorts of – all starts?
Yeah. I hope it's going to happen now, because I'm at that age where I can still kind of defend myself, you know.
If I get any older
and this zombie apocalypse comes, I'm gonna be helpless. I'm just gonna be zombie food.
Look at all the regenerative properties that being a zombie has. I mean, you see these like, you know, half decimated corpses rising out of the grave and like running the 100-yard dash without stopping.
True. I know.
Yeah, I mean, think of it. Can you do that today? You know, I've been doing this training for this tri event that, you know, I've somehow crazily got involved in. Yeah, this is tough stuff. I mean, if I could, you know, have a pill or, you know, get a bite and just be instantaneously energetic and never have to worry about, you know, stopping for water or food other than grains, you know?
That's true. And what about this MVA thing in Brooklyn? Did you hear about that? The ambulance hit the motorcyclist guy, and now the guy is apparently part of a gang or something, and they're looking for retribution on the EMS crews.
You know, it was kind of interesting because, you know, I was on a transport into Brooklyn, and we passed by a motorcycle group. I won't say a gang. I'll call them a club. They all had leather jackets with the same logo on the back, and that covered the whole back thing going on there. And there was sort of like this little moment of uneasiness. You know, we were like wondering about that. And if we stop, if anybody takes retribution out against EMS, that's their own stupidity. That's what, that just shows how dangerous our job is, that we're a focus of public notoriety. And there are, because of that, you can have people who hate official agencies and therefore hate EMS, you know, but they hate everybody equally. So, and I've heard this guy defended, you know, he's a gang member and a father of three.
Well, it can be both. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys are you know, they are family. They have families too. It's not just, you know.
But it's always, you know, if you look at it, and it's a sad thing, and, I really feel, my heart goes out to the crew that night that was on that bus and had that, because, you know, we're there to save lives, not end them. And,
sure.
That's unbelievable. You know, that's a career ender in some cases.
I mean, listen, that's the area I used to work when I worked in Brooklyn. You know, I used to work, you know, with my mom and these people, you know, when I worked there. So, I mean, I know that area. I mean, I drove past that road many, many times, you know.
Yep.
And the funny thing is, I think about it, and I'm like, you know, it's just, the sad thing is that when something like that happens, and it's clearly an accident, you know, for them to look to do retribution on the crews, it's like ridiculous. Especially since that ends up putting everybody else in a sort of on alert too, because even like you said, you're driving by, you're not even in my mom and the ambulance, and these gang members and stuff, if they're looking to do that, they don't know the difference between my mom and
or these, don't care.
Right. They just see an ambulance, and if they think that's an opportunity now to sort of get even or make a point, you know, they can act on it.
But you know what?
Hopefully it's all talk. It's just anger talk going on. There's not going to be any
you and
real
I have done
actions,
enough,
you know, so.
You and I have done enough MVAs and with motorcyclists, and some of the times that when I've done them, they've had the other club members around because one of their members go down, and they're looking to you to save their, you know, their brother, you know, and.
Sure.
And you're doing everything you can, and all you do is get assistance from them or the knowledge to stay out of your way. So, you know, they know that. They know that EMS is there. They know that, first of all, that, you know, being on motorcycles, it's more dangerous than being in a car. And so they look at EMS as saying, I would be really, really surprised if that wasn't just a few people and that wasn't the media taking it to the next level, and the guys behind the scenes, you know, the guys in the clubs, the guys on the ground aren't saying, Dick, you know, we're not doing that. That's not
hopefully.
We love it. We need these guys. We're not going to start a war with them because we want them to show.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I haven't talked to anybody from that area, but
I know what I've
seen on Facebook, that they're saying the NYPD put out official warnings to the ambulance agencies.
Yeah,
There
was an interdepartment memo that went around, and all female crew members were taken off the bus.
Yeah.
All students were taken off the bus. So they are running minimal crew with only male crews, and, you know,
what am I, expendable because I'm a guy?
That's pretty much it, you know.
You're making your mind. You want equal rights.
Hold it. Stop. Doesn't that just bring up how backward we are in this whole thing? We've just, you know, gone through this whole thing about putting women in the front lines of combat. you know, this whole breakthrough thing, the Army has finally embraced this idea. And this whole thing of don't talk, don't ask, don't tell. I mean, it's just crazy. And there we have EMS, and it's like, no, you're too frail to be in a dangerous situation.
I know.
The rest of them would
rather be on the street. They don't want to be pulled off either.
And believe me, you know, you don't want to cross some of these women. You know, they have more to prove than some of the guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really wonder about that sort of thinking, that judgment. But, you know, that just shows how backward we are.
So, Josh, next week you're not going to be here, right?
Yeah, next week I've got that, like I said, that my first step in the triathlon rage. I'm doing my very first ever sprint triathlon out in Staten Island. And it's considered sort of a baby step, but it's still, you know, a swim, a bike, a run, and
it's a lot.
I'm nervous. You know, it's not a big deal to some, and I
listen,
have friends.
Not a race,
right? Well, to some it is, but not for me. I just want to finish,
finish. That's the main thing.
Safe and sound, not drown.
Exactly.
That's the idea.
Yep. Exactly. All right, Josh. That's pretty much it. I guess we'll end it there. And hopefully I'll have a guest speaker for next week.
Good. I'm that easily replaceable.
It's not that easy. Believe me, people, you know, everybody, you know, it's not as easy as you think. So I'll be sitting here talking to myself next week. But
so rain or shine, come co-host or not, next week you're going to be on.
I'll be here one way or the other. So. Either droning on about myself or, you know, hopefully I have somebody on here. But next week should be a good topic. So
next week's topic?
I'm going to talk a little bit about geriatric patients in the field and, you know, the difficulties dealing with them and families and all that good stuff. So it should be an interesting topic to go on that anybody could come on and be a guest and give their opinion. Hint, hint.
callers tonight, please call in.
Right. Exactly. All right, Josh, that's it. I guess I'll talk to you the week after, I suppose.
All right, man. Wish me luck.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure I'll see you then between now and then.
Awesome.
All right. Make sure you videotape. We could put it up on the office hours.
That's going to happen. Not at all.
We'll put a videotape of your escapades during the marathon on EMS Office Hours. That'll be the show. We won't do the show. We'll just have a video of you.
You know,
it's at the launch.
It's enough. I've given up my pride and I wear spandex.
Yeah. Maybe I'll show up and videotape it. And I'll say, coming live from the triathlon tonight.
Thanks, man. You got my back. I love you too.
We'll do that. That'd be a great video. Put up on a video. Come on. Human interest.
You're an idiot.
All right, Josh. I'll talk to you later. We'll see
all right,
you
soon.
All right.
Take care.
Well, everybody, that's it for tonight. As always, any questions, comments, suggestions for the show, send them over to jhoffman@emsdaysafety.com. Until next week, this is Jim Hoffman, EMS Office Hours. As always, stay safe.